Welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content and word pronunciation is simply the opinion of the hosts and their guests.
Well, all I got is my life being free. Close so I'm up, you can't take that from me, and you should know it.
Hello and welcome to episode 92. That's right, I'm back. This time I don't have to be bleep. Welcome to New Shooter Canada. And tonight we have quite a round circle of hosts and guests. So let's start off on my right. We have Mr. Thomas Donnelly. Say hello.
Hello.
Mr. Mike Kisson. Say hello.
Hello.
How do you know who's on the right and who's on the left?
You know, it's all in cyberspace. So everyone's on my left and right. Okay. And we have two very special guests. We have E.T. Hi, E.T.
How are you?
Welcome to the show.
And thank you, guys.
And we have my very precious Wanda.
Hi.
So as customary, let's get started with what we did in Gun. And since my section is blank, I'll start with me. I did nothing outside of the charity shoot, but that's our main topic, so I'll save that for later. So outside of the charity shoot, I didn't do anything. Thomas, what'd you do?
I just took the guns up to the range to sight in everything for the charity shoot, but I never ended up shooting them. So besides that, I didn't do anything. Everything was charity shoot oriented.
All right. How about you, Mike? What'd you do?
Earlier in the week, I bought some Comp 3 speed loaders for my GP 100. They're the competition style, so they have a much longer handle to grab onto. Supposed to make you faster, but I just hope they work. They were supposed to get here. They were coming from the U.S., and they were set to get here on Friday, but they didn't quite make it. They got hung up at the border. After the charity shoot on the Sunday, I came home, and I shot an IDPA match out east of Ottawa, and I used my GP100 for the first time. Overall, it went well. I rushed one of the stages, which I paid for it. I had a lot of bad hit. And not only that, but it hurt my hand. Like, just trying to go that fast, trying to hold on to the gun while it's going off. I fumbled a couple of reloads, and I actually met a couple of shooters from Peterborough. So that's like 3.5 hours away, 4 hours from where I was shooting. And they drove all the way up to shoot the match. Cool. And they're actually revolver shooters. They weren't shooting that today. But it was great because they actually gave me a lot of real good advice on shooting and some strategy on how to shoot a revolver competitively. So overall, it went really well for my first try.
Excellent. Yeah, you don't see a lot of people competing with revolvers these days.
No, I don't know what my score is, but I know I won my division.
You're the only one shooting?
Only one shooting a revolver.
Okay.
E.T. with
full house loads?
I'm still shooting the Wolf reloaded ammo that I bought. So they're supposed to be reloaded for IPSC power factor. After I've shot all these and I get the brass out of it, which is really why I bought the ammo, which for the brass, I will start reloading them a little bit lighter than what they come at, because I can go a lot lower for power factor for competition.
Was the brass all one manufacturer?
I think it was about 700 or 800 of it was all PMC, and then okay. It was like 100 of it was mixed stuff, and then I had a random box of 50 that was aluminum cased or nickel cased.
Oh, beautiful. Keep 700 cases and do shoot those.
E.T., what'd you get up to this week?
Oh, well, last weekend I went camping on Crownland with my girlfriend, Rosé, and I brought out my Rock Island Armory 1022 copy and got her shooting for the first time. I have had her before shooting an air rifle and air pistol, but it was her first firearm experience, and I had to zero it from 25 meters to the 50 meters mark for the event on Saturday. So after I got it dialed in, I had her go up to target, and she actually outshot me. So she was all glad when I told her that she was shooting better than most hunters in the woods. You know, she was all giggly and proud. So it was
awesome. That's amazing.
Was it her first time shooting?
Yep, first time, man.
Excellent. Excellent. See, I told you, girls make great students.
Sure do.
Awesome. Anything else?
No, besides the charity shoot, I think that was pretty much it. I actually installed a sling on the same rifle for the competition. So I didn't have any studs on it, so I had to buy the studs in Boutique Larchereau in Gatineau. They were really helpful. And I drilled the stock and put in the studs and was able to run a sling for the event, which helped me because I really needed it. The stability was
awesome.
Excellent.
Is that a wood stock or like a synthetic?
Yeah, it's a wood stock. I couldn't tell you what kind of wood it is from the Philippines, but it's a little larger than the regular Ruger stock, I believe. So it does provide a good
perch. Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so he's got the Rock River Arms. A clone of a 1022.
Yeah, Rock Island Armory.
Okay.
And it was, what, $180?
Yeah, I got that from P&B, I believe. And I actually wanted to buy another one afterwards, but I think we're pretty much out of it.
Well, yeah, actually, my Canadian Tire up the street carries those.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was quite surprised.
The only issue I've had with it is when I went to install the scope mount, I was actually using the Wheeler Engineering torque wrench.
Okay.
So I know I didn't put over stress on the screws because I was using the proper torque setting, but I actually had one of the provided mount screws that came with the rifle. One of them broke, basically. So I contacted Odell Engineering, I believe they're called, which are the Canada distributor for RIA. And they basically told me that they did not have any spare parts for it. And the thread pitch on those screws does not match the Ruger one. So I just pulled out the other ones and added some Loctite on them so that, you know, even three screws would be able to hold on there since it's only a rimfire, you know.
Yeah, I had to do that. I had my Remington 597. Same thing. I had a torque wrench and I didn't overdo it. And I stripped the screw or the receiver. Actually stripped the receiver. So yeah. I red Loctite the other three screws, so it's not going anywhere.
Nice. And
so, Miss Wanda, what did you do in guns?
Nothing.
Nothing? What do we have you here for?
You tell me something. everything happened at the charity shoot.
Okay.
All right, well, this brings us to guns in the news, and this week we're actually, we're going to skip over this section. We don't have any news stories this week. My heart is broken and saddened, truly it is, and we are going to go straight into our main topic. So we're going to start off with discussing what we did on Friday, which was the Fire Art Solution Fundamental class. Since we were all, well, minus Wanda, she was busy rolling targets with Sarah, but E.T. and Mike and I attended the class. What were you doing Friday, Thomas?
I had to wait around because we had one of the prize guns show up.
Oh,
and
right.
It was coming in from Cranpar, so I had to wait for the nurse, and I had to wait for the gun, and they both showed up around 1:30.
Right.
And then I had to...
And then it's a couple-hour drive, right? Okay, yeah. So let's start with Mike. What did you learn?
Oh, I learned a lot of good drills. And a lot of good practices that he used. Like he kept saying, you know, if you can't make the shot at 3 yards, you can't make the shot at 10 yards. And I feel like there's a lot of people, and including myself, I do this all the time. You know, you get a gun and you want to be able to shoot it from 10 yards away or 20 yards away and get perfect bullseyes. Well, if you don't practice up close, then you're never going to be good enough to take it that far back. So it's all about taking baby steps. I also learned a bunch of stuff about clearing your gun. When you're done shooting, at least in like IDPA and things like that, they always tell you to show your gun's empty, so you rack it. And it had become habit from shooting competition at just racking it, I don't know, five times. And he made a good point that why are you doing that? You rack it once. If you look in there, if the brass is still in there, okay, maybe try again. But if the brass isn't there, why do you keep doing it? And I actually found when we started doing malfunction clearing drills and we'd put dummy rounds in there, when I went to rack the slide to get the dummy round out, it was such habit of mine to just rack it a bunch of times, like I do in competition when I'm done, that I would actually rack it a bunch of times and a bunch of live rounds would just go flying out of it. So just some good practices like that.
Excellent. How about you, E.T.? What did you learn?
Well, excuse me. I chose to go to that course for the simple reason that I did not have any formal pistol training. And although I've shot in the past, I wanted to avoid starting to train and ending up developing bad habits that would be harder to correct on the road. So basically, that's what I got. I got a proper instruction on grip, trigger placement, on sight acquisition, shooting one-handed, which I have never done in the past, especially weak hand. And like Mike said, those malfunction drills were just hammering the point home, and they were actually really fun. It got my adrenaline pumping, and it just gave me a good basis to build upon. And I just hope I can remember everything so I could put it to practice. And basically, that's it. I got a whole lot more than I paid for, because the $50 cost for the day, Rick basically gave us a big gift with that. And I mean, there was so much value for the money. And plus, it was all going for charity. So I'm so thankful for everything.
It was a great deal. It really was.
Yeah. I you know what, E.T., I'm in the same boat as you. I've never, ever taken any formal training, pistol training, and I don't even own a semi-auto slide gun. It's I had to borrow Rick's. I shoot cowboy. I got 20. Well, I guess I got 22s that are semi-autos. But I've never taken any formal training, so I learned so much. And I also learned that you don't hammer down pointing down at the ground.
And why not, George?
Somebody had said, because if there's a round in there, then it could, and it goes off, there it could ricochet. See, cowboy, there is no hammer down, because as soon as you pull the trigger, your hammer is down. So I've never this hammer down thing. It's foreign to me. I had no idea what that was, and so that was pointed out that it needs to be pointed at the burr. I don't really get it, because you just finished racking and checking and showing clear. So I'm not really sure. Anyways, but
was only a safe direction. All
it's times. A, it wasn't a safe direction. It was pointed at the ground. So, but I was told that's an RO's biggest pet peeve and a major no-no. So I got my wrist slapped for that in a very nice way, mind you. And so I learned and kept it hammer down at the berm.
Yeah, that's where they want their rounds to end up. They don't want rounds hitting the ground and going over the berm.
Yeah. Well, see, like I said, like when I shoot cowboy, there is no hammer down, because as soon as you pull the trigger on that last round, your hammer is down. So there is like there's no hammer down, because your hammer's already down, right? And with show clear or whatever the command is, so your slide is back, the chamber is empty, you close. And the gun's empty, so it's like I didn't think of anything, because I know the gun's empty, right? I just checked, and that's I just hammered down on pointed to
you,
the ground.
You say that, but there have been times, and I've heard of stories where guys will think that the gun is empty, and lots of times it's not actually the RO job to make sure that the gun is empty. It's actually the shooter's job to make sure that the gun is empty. And guys will not realize that there is a round in there. Maybe that brass is really tarnished and is dark in there. You don't see it. They'll close that slide. They'll pull that trigger, and that gun will go off.
Oh, I've seen it happen. And I've seen the concrete fragment and travel all over the place, and the bullet ricochet around the range. And, so either from that or from negligent discharge handling the gun. But it does
happen. That's the whole reason why they want you to put the hammer down before you put it in there, because it's just that one last check that there is no live round in there before you put the gun in there and you start walking around like it's empty.
And if it does go off, it goes downrange in the back and you get scored.
Yeah, no, I understand why they want the hammer down. I get that. I just, it was, the thought that never occurred to me was that there would be an issue at pointing at the ground, right? Because you have to have your muzzle in a safe direction, so it's pointed at the ground in front of me.
It depends where you are. Like at the pistol house, it was the club rule that the muzzle had to be pointed in the air.
Really?
Yeah. So everybody transporting everybody transporting in and out is either in case or muzzle pointed straight up. So
Yeah. So, anyways,
that's
I learned
the
lesson.
That's the only safe direction in that situation, right?
So I learned my lesson, and the rest of the day I had it pointed at the berm when I did my hammer down.
Yep. It stuck.
Yeah.
I can interject a life story quickly, guys, sure. In regards to that. I used to be in the Army Reserves back in the day, way back in the day when I was in shape. And I was drilled with the C7 rifle to remove the mag and rack the bolt 3 times, look in the chamber, and then, you know, let it fly and let the shot go pointing in the safe directions. And a few years later, I actually missed a buck hunting. Went back to the truck and I had a lever action rifle and I reverted back to the training because I was still on a high stress level of adrenaline from missing the buck. And I racked the lever 3 times and pulled the trigger right beside the pickup truck. I was aiming at the ground, but I had a friend 2 feet away from me and my dumb forgot that I had a tubular magazine and that couldn't be removed. So I basically shot 3 or 4 feet in front of me and my friend jumped, you know, and I was like, why did I do that? I know better than this. I know it's a tubular magazine. And years later, listening to Tom Gresham, he had an expert that had a high military training. And what he explained was that people revert back to their training. So I think it was actually Masad Ayoub. And what he was explaining is, let's say police officers fired at the range and when they had revolvers, they were used to emptying out the cylinder in their hand and putting the empties in their pockets. And they actually found, police officers after a real shooting and they had a pocket full of empty brass because unconsciously that's how they trained. So when it became a high stress environment situation, they reverted back to that training. So, you know, dumping and putting the brass in your pocket doesn't make sense in real life, but it's all that conditioning that comes into play. So maybe that's why they stress on, you know, the gun's empty, but maybe one time you'll forget to remove the magazine and you'll drop the slide and, you know, pull that trigger. So yep. It's just something to keep in mind.
Yep, absolutely. All right, so let's move on to memorable moments. Mike, what was your most memorable moment?
Well, about partway through, Matt McClatchy from Slampire Radio actually showed up, and he was helping Rick run the line. And I can't remember who he was talking to, but he was talking to someone about their flinch that they have. And he said something to them, and it was that you have to mentally prepare yourself for the recoil. But separate like the physical preparedness for the recoil. Because if you physically prepare for recoil, that's flinching, that's pointing the gun down, right? Controlling the muzzle down. But just I don't know why, but it just kind of blew my mind the idea of mentally preparing yourself and being able to separate it from not physically preparing yourself.
How about you, E.T.? What's your most memorable moment?
Can you get back to me?
Sure. I'll do my most memorable moment. Sure. Actually showed up.
Yes.
A bit of an inside joke. I have canceled on Rick far too many times, and he's always been very gracious about it. And unfortunately, I had to drive 6 hours to finally take his course. My most memorable moment, on a serious note, is just the whole day, just everything about the day, the fact that I got top-notch quality training and just meeting E.T. and met you for the first time, got to meet some new friends, some old friends, Rick and Mario were there, and you know, I'd have to say the whole day in general, getting out and doing some pistol training for the very first time. Was that long enough for you to think of something?
And your back yeah. held out. And
my back held out. I had to go get blood work done in an X-ray this week because my back has been out pretty bad, and I basically got told I'm fat and out of shape. Who knew?
When you went into cowboy action, did you have to take a safety course or any pistol training for that?
No, because it's all single action, and you're hammered down on an empty chamber.
All right, so, I got my memorable moment. Actually, F2.
Okay.
Liam, both of us.
All right. The first one, which was training related, and maybe for people out of Quebec or at least my range, it might be foreign or not, but my most memorable moment was having my pistol loaded with a bullet in the chamber and holstering the gun and then taking the gun out and shooting around. It seems simple, but at my range, if you're not black badge certified and it's not an approved black badge training day at the range, you're not even allowed to holster an empty weapon, you know. So basically you leave the gun on the table and do it that way. So being able to use a holster and learning how to do it safely and actually firing around from the holster, that was huge for me, and it made that trip possible because I could never do that at my home range. So yeah, that's my training related memory. The other one, it was the story about our friends that were detained that morning while we were waiting for them to start the training.
I felt so bad for those guys.
Well, tell us what happened, E.T.
Well, the gist of it is two gentlemen from the International Liberty or Death podcast, Tyler and Matt. Matt that actually made the trip all the way from Texas.
Mm-hmm.
They were at the other hotel next door, and I guess the hotel staff there wasn't made aware that they were shooting participants at their hotel. So when they were gearing up to go to the event on Friday morning, they made multiple trips to bring their equipment to their cars, and the janitor basically freaked out when he saw the boys wearing some load-bearing of vest equipment and I think Tyler had his shotgun and a scabbard on his back. So the guy kind of overreacted instead of just going, "Hey, where are you guys up to today?" You know. So he called the cops on him, and as they were basically ready to pull out, they had two police vehicles show up, and basically I think Tyler was out of the truck trying to get a Wi-Fi signal. And so they put him on the ground with the cop's knee to his back, and Matt was told to put his hands out the window and slowly unbuckle his seatbelt. And
he had a loaded gun pointed to his head with the finger on the trigger.
Yeah, both of them had guns with fingers on the triggers pointed at them. And it took about 40 minutes for the police to sort out all the paperwork and make sure that all was in transportation order as far as trigger locks and cases went for the restricted stuff. And there was some issue with the Robinson Arms, I believe, that Tyler had, which was unloaded and cased, but the cop thought he should have a trigger on it. So that basically they had to tell the cop what the regulations were on that. And once they figured everything out, they let him go, and they were on their way to meet up with us and train. So, but they had one hell of a story out of it.
Yes. And they said that, you know, the police weren't that bad, because once the situation de-escalated a little bit, they got a little bit better and a little bit better. You know, before the end, they were actually really friendly with them, and they even invited them to the charity shoot. So,
yeah, they even complimented Tyler on his 243 rifle.
Yeah.
He
had there. Yeah.
Well, and it goes to show, right? They went through everything, and the boys were legal.
Yeah,
It was an overzealous member of the public, and perhaps not quite enough discretion, and and this is Canada, where the general public aren't used to those types of scenes. But at the end of the day, they were legal. It just caused a bit of a ruckus, but they were released, and all was good.
Yeah, no guns were taken away, and they did not end up in jail, although they sat in the squad car with handcuffs on their hands for quite an amount of time. But poor Matt didn't have the AC in his squad car.
Oh. Well, my dad and I had kind of joked leading into the charity shoot He wasn't sure if he could make it or not. And he's like, well, if I go, can I strap my SKS to my back and ride the motorcycle there? I said, yeah, but you'll probably get pulled over by every single OPP jurisdiction between here and Brockville.
Oh, probably.
And he's like, yeah, good point.
Yeah.
Perfectly legal. Just like, you know, Tyler's rifle that didn't have the trigger lock on it. You don't need a trigger lock for transporting. Perfectly legal. Right? But
it's funny, though. You know, last time we were going to Michigan, the first thing Border Services said to me, and I told him I had the Ruger 1022, and he said, is it in the lock case? And I said, yep. And he said, does it have a trigger lock on it? And I said, yep. And it didn't have either. I wasn't going to argue with him the point of law. But a lot of them assume it has to have a trigger lock.
I got pulled over by Ministry of Natural Resources in Quebec. They were doing a road check at the end of the hunting season. And I had my rifles and cases, but my lever gun, I had to cut the cable lock on it because I'd forgotten the key. So it didn't have a lock on it, but it was, you know, unloaded and in a case. And plus, my buddy warned me that they were doing that checkpoint. So I threw a bunch of bags over the cases and all that. And they basically only that they wanted me to step out of the car to search the vehicle. And, well, I won't get into it because it's a long story, but I made my point that it wasn't within their right to do so.
Who was it? Was it the Ministry of Natural Resources or?
Yeah, but the cops were there too doing a DUI check at the same time.
Okay.
So basically they saw the hunting gear in my trailer, so they assumed I was hunting, which I was. And when the guy came up to me, and he told me he was going to search, I said, do you have a warrant? And he said, no. And I said, well, then what are you searching for? He says, oh, I want to inspect your firearms. Well, I asked him, I said, who told you I had firearms? He says, well, you told the other guy that you came back from hunting. Well, I said, yeah, but who says I'm hunting with a firearm? I could have been bow hunting or, you know, crossbow hunting. So, and I knew my rifle cases weren't in plain sight. So I told him again, I said, what are you basing on your assertion if you can't see a firearm? And I didn't admit having one. So after a while, he calmed down and I told him, if you really want to inspect them, I'll pull them out onto the hood and you can inspect the rifles. But I said, you don't have a right to search my vehicle. So then he turns to me and he says, well, are they all unloaded, cased, and trigger locked? All I answered, because I knew that that lever action was not trigger locked, I said, all the rifles are transported according to Canadian law. And from then he said, okay, you can go. He didn't even ask me to pull. You know, so I didn't lie, and I was legal. So, and that way I didn't lie, and he felt secure enough in letting me go, you know.
Right. Okay. Last one for everybody. What types of skills did you take away from it? Mike, take it away.
Well, just a lot of good drills in general of practicing how to clear your firearm. Also, just some interesting things like just to test your accuracy. I think it's called like the ball and dummy drill. And I've never really done that before. And I found that really useful. He talked a lot about using a firearm for a defensive situation. And he was just pointing out, you know, we were using IDPA targets, which is what I use for competition all the time. And the, what they call an IDPA, the down zero, the center of the target, you know, the spot that you're supposed to aim for really isn't where you should be aiming if you're ever in a unfortunate event. So that was just some really good information to learn and just to keep in the back of your mind.
How about you, E.T.? What skills did you take away from it?
Actually, accuracy, the trigger placement, the finger placement on the trigger. Like Rick said, most people were thought to put the middle of the index furthermost pad onto the trigger and center it there. He had us putting the joint, the first joint, instead in the center of the trigger. He was saying that in a defensive situation, trigger placement, if it was done on the pad, could be like an eight to the left or an eight to the right, and then you'd be pulling your shots. Whereas if you put it on the joint, it was like more easier to center instinctively. And with that simple thing, I think I increased my accuracy at 25 meters a whole lot. I mean, I used to have a hard time hitting an 8x8 target at 25 meters. And when we did the zombie shoot, I was able to get all my shots center mass and a couple of headshots too. So I was just amazed at that improvement, you know, in a single day like that. So that was awesome.
Yeah, what I took away from it was one of the skills is when he was doing the trigger pull for you and doing the 1 pound, 2 pound, 3 pound, and then the trigger would break. It was the first time I had holes touching each other, and it really kind of opened up my eyes as to just taking your time, just, you know, squeezing that trigger and just letting it break when it breaks, and just, you know, really, really you know, taking the time, go slow before you go fast, I guess is the best way to put it.
Right. Oh, and the smoothness of the trigger pull. I used to stack it. I finally learned that, you know, you just did a continual swoop, but it wasn't a quick one, you know. So there's a difference between stacking your trigger gradually, that you edge it slightly forward until the shot goes off, versus doing that, you know, press one, press two, press three in one single movement, you know. Smooth is fast.
Yeah, it's like doing a double action revolver.
Yep. All right. Well, that takes care of the course. Then we all got together at Keystone Pub for some well-deserved beverages and some bar wares as far as food. So did you guys, did you guys have fun? Who did you meet? Who did you talk to? Any thoughts, ideas? How did, what happened on the pub night?
I met an ET outside smoking.
I didn't even realize it was Thomas. We talked for a few minutes, then, and he mentioned something in a click. I was like, "Oh, you're that Thomas."
he probably mentioned some girl was cute.
Well, there was a few.
We got there late. Everyone had basically gotten settled in by the time Wanda and I got there. So John, his fiance Kelly, Wanda and I ended up at a table together, so we were able to rekindle some old friendships there, and had some really good laughs and whatnot. And then this guy in a white helmet came over and asked to have his picture taken.
I was so excited about meeting him.
That was my point. I was going to go for too.
So I finally met Filthier. Yeah. So it's been a long time coming.
No, he was hilarious.
George, was that the first time you met him?
Yeah, I've never met him before.
Really?
George has bailed on me in the last two charity shoots. I'm just saying.
Plus, charity shoots were out in New Brunswick, and I could have met him on both occasions, but the last minute I bailed.
I was excited to meet him, too.
Oh, he's a very nice guy, actually, for he's, Stormtrooper.
He's very nice.
Yep, so I got my picture taken with Filthy, and when I saw him pull that helmet out, I was like, oh, yeah, there's my chance. I've been, you know, waiting for an occasion to see the guy in person, and he's just hilarious. I mean, all his shtickoma there with the Empire. So yeah. it was just great meeting him, and plus at the same time, I was seated just beside Andrew from the Canadian Patriot podcast and Matt and Tyler from the International Liberty Earth podcast. So met those guys there, and we hit it off pretty good. So after the evening at the pub, they asked me back to their hotel room to continue imbibing in some beverages, and we actually film a quick podcast episode there. So,
at least somebody did.
Yeah. Well, it was something. I mean,
four podcasts and nobody recorded the show at all. But we did have Rick. So we will have material coming up.
Yeah.
And I know Chris Anderson was going to do something, but he was too busy. We put him to work too, and he was shooting. He had a great time.
All right. Well, that brings us to the charity shoot. So we had, at the charity shoot, we had three stages. We had a zombie shoot, And then we had an MQT, which was kind of our own little version of an Appleseed. And then we had a hostage target out at 100 yards that you had to shoot at. So let's start. Well, since Wanda, Mike, and I were up near the clubhouse, we didn't really get to see much action on the line. But Thomas, you were working the line in the pistol house for the zombie shoot. So why don't you tell us about that? And then E.T., since you shot the whole charity shoot, then how about you tell us about your experience shooting the zombie targets? So Thomas, take it away first, and then E.T., you follow up.
Well, we ran everybody through in advanced stages. So everybody went through, who had restricted, would go through the pistol house first. And I don't think I had any newbies. Everybody I had were experienced shooters. But not everybody bought a handgun. I would say maybe a quarter of the people just brought long guns. I was quite surprised. I only had maybe 40 people go through the pistol house. Not as many as I expected. I expected more, but no problems. Everybody's an experienced shooter. I think there was a one guy that took, I think they came in for the RJ Woods course. He had a NORC 1911. And talking about doing malfunction drills, this guy, I bet you he had 90% of his rounds fail. Doing the zombie shoot with this NORC commander. And he cleared every single one properly. One rock, he was completely, he probably had at least 35 failures. And he handled them beautifully. He missed a few shots because he was losing some time, but he was the only one that even had any problems. I had no misfires, no problems on the line.
Not to bash on 1911s because I used the wrong one, but on the... The training, the fast training the day previous, there was one guy on the line with a SIG 1911 and basically it fell to pieces.
I mean, did this guy have glasses on?
It was Wes.
Yeah. I know the guy's name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really nice guy. I spoke to him a few times, but maybe it's the ammo that's giving him the problems then. If he's having failures in both guns.
Well, I don't know if it was Wes that was shooting the NORC 1911. Mm. Wes was shooting the 1911 in the course.
Yeah, then
he switched
to
a malfunction drill. Parts were falling out of the gun.
Unreal.
Yeah.
And it was a really nice gun, too. I mean, I felt sorry for him. It was a nice SIG, I believe. It was beautiful. I just commented to him a few minutes before that happened how it was really nice and sweet, you know.
The only problem I ever had with the 1911 was my black bad quartz, and I bought some reloads from DBX bullets out west, and they weren't crimped properly, and they kept catching on the feed ramp. But besides a bullet problem, I've never had a mechanical issue with a 1911. I love the platform. I love 1911.
My Smith & Wesson 1911 PD, I never had a jam with it. You know, so I don't have experience with 1911s being problematic. You know, so that's why I hear other people bashing them. From my own experience, I can't say I've had a problem with them. You know.
I put over 25,000 rounds through my Smith & Wesson 1911, and I wore out the extractor. That was about it. I replaced the extractor once. That was it. I never had an issue with it. It just kept going, and it was accurate.
So what, just to move this along a bit, what did you do for Fred?
Oh. So Fred and Filthy come in, and they've only got one gun. I think Filthy had a conversion unit for his Glock, and they wanted to take turns with his gun. But that means I'd have to run a separate relay just for Fred instead of having to run everybody at the same time. So I said, well, I brought 22s. Do you want to use one of my guns? And he just looked at me and his face lit up. He goes, you didn't bring that confiscated 22 with a red dot, did you? I said, yeah, I did, by the way. He goes, I'd like to use that, please. And he shot very well, and he won the match.
Now we got to add on. What did he say when he accepted his first place medal? What did he call your 22?
I don't know. What did he say?
He said, it's easy to win when you have a cheater gun.
Oh, it's not a cheater gun.
I was.
He did, too. I forgot about that.
He totally did. It was like, that's the moment of the charity shoot for me.
You guys should have seen Trevor's face when he learned which gun Fred was using and to win the medal.
Oh, I would have liked to see that.
Oh, Trevor just turned red.
Oh, the compensated 22 wins another charity shoot.
You know, and that goes back four charity shoots. Trevor and I had a bet back 4 years ago that I would beat him, or he would beat me at the charity shoot, and I won the bet. And so ever since then, they started calling it a cheater gun, and it's not. It's just, you can bring in, if they said any gun you want, so that's what I brought, because it's accurate.
So, E.T., how about you, you tell us about your experience on stage one.
Stage one was a whole lot better than anticipated. If you would have asked me on Thursday, my confidence level would have been pretty low. But after the fast training on Friday, I was actually not scared of finishing last, you know? Yeah, I got all my shots on target, a couple of headshots in there, and even left-handed. Was that?
What gun were you using?
I was using my Smith & Wesson M&P9, and I just purchased this pistol used a couple of months ago. I shot it once before the training on Friday, so I couldn't be any happier. That was well above my expectations.
Excellent, excellent,
excellent. All right, memorable moments. Thomas, any memorable moments from stage one?
From stage one?
Yeah.
It would have to be the guy doing that 1911 drills, like all those misfits. The guy was like a clock. He just kept going. Like, I would have given up after the first stage. And he just kept going and going and going. And he ran the whole thing, and he did all the stoppage drills. And so I think he impressed me. He really did, because he didn't give up. He just kept going, and he finished. He missed maybe 5 or 6 shots. But, you know, even with all the – and I don't think he lost. I don't think he was the worst shot either.
Cool. How about you, E.T.? Any memorable moments from the first round?
Well, the only thing that comes to mind is the lady who won the McClatchy Trophy, Corinne, I believe.
Corinne,
yep. Yep. She got confused with the target number assignation versus some other number that was taped on the wall. Oh, so no. I think she was shooting in the wrong target, or I believe since she wasn't sure, she just withheld. So she came up short in one of the procedures there before she was able to clarify which target she had to engage. So I believe she got less shots on target because of that. So
and she won the biggest trophy.
Yeah, the biggest one, the shiniest one.
Now, I don't know if Corinne listens or not, but Corinne, let me tell you, when we walked up to the firing line for the fast, Rick was shooting beside me, and the first thing Rick said to me was, "George, did you need to go put your initials on the target?" And that goes back to Maple Seed when Kelly shouts out, "Hey, somebody's shooting my target," and I'm like, "Oh, sorry, that's me."
So, who did Corinne come in with? I think she was her husband that was there.
West. Yeah, I'm not sure what the guy's name is, but they're the ones from Saskatchewan.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it Wes?
Wes.
He had
Regina. They came from Regina.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah had, I think she ended up not shooting because she didn't want to hit anybody else's target.
All right. Well, somebody's got down something about Sharp 97 Tango Yankee Chip.
Well, on the Friday night when I got into the bar, the first person I met was Benny. And as soon as he sees me, he reaches his hand in his pocket and extends his hand and he shakes my hand and he put a Tango Yankee Chip in my hand. And it meant a lot to me. I really appreciate that he did that. That was probably one of my most memorable moments, the whole thing.
Okay.
Nice. So,
it was nice of him. It was greatly appreciated.
And I can tell you guys who came in first, second, and third for stage one. First place was Fred LaPierre with Thomas's cheater gun.
Shut up.
He scored 130. Next was Rick. He scored 94. And then Wesley Stevens, he scored 93, and he came in third.
Okay, E.T., so you were, I believe, the only one who was able to shoot the MQT.
Oh, was I?
I'm sure a lot of people know what the MQT kind of consists of. It's very simple, or very similar to the Appleseed, and we've talked a lot about Appleseed on this show. So how did it go for you?
Horrible.
Horrible.
Why horrible?
It was horrible. It's the only event I actually prepared to. Like I mentioned earlier, I sighted in my rifle. I bothered putting a sling on it. I totally misjudged my abilities as far as standing, shooting standing, kneeling, and well, prone, I was a little better, but I was still not up to par as I should have been. The last time I shot kneeling and prone was back in the Army Reserves, and that's well over 14 years ago. I haven't done it since, and I really should get back to those basics. The things that hurt me, all the targets were basically at 50 meters, whereas I believe Appleseed is set out at different distances, but they scaled down the target to represent accurately those distances all at 50 meters. So basically you had a larger target on top, which you're engaged standing up, then two smaller ones in the middle for kneeling, and three smaller dimension ones on the bottom for prone. And each event was timed. I think you had 2 minutes for standing, and then 55 seconds or so for the kneeling. You had to shoot two bullets on the left target, do a mag change, and then eight in the right one. And then prone, you had 5 minutes to put 10 in the three. There was a certain round count in each. But basically, I wasn't stable enough to be accurate. And the Butler Creek mags that I have for my Rock Island 1022 are just too hard to pull out and stick back in. That slowed me a lot. So at the kneeling portion, I only managed to get the two shots off of the first mag. By the time I did my mag change, I was out of time. So I didn't fire a single shot out of the 8 rounds from that second mag. So basically, that was it. I know I can do better than that. And Stacy was shooting right next to me, so she gave me a few good tips, and I definitely intend on practicing that and showing up to a maple seed whenever we get to have one here.
Yeah, it'd be great. Yeah, a lot of those skills, they teach you at maple seed or an apple seed if you go down to the U.S. And there's a lot of good information in there on how to properly run your firearm and doing your magazine changes and even just on accuracy, how to hold the gun, things like that. A lot of things that, you know, people don't think too much more into, you know, hold the gun. Okay, well, I'm holding it up. What more do you want? Well, you want to hold it dead still.
And Stacy was running a good shot. Lines, so they had an excellent instructor there.
Yeah, they really did.
But I believe they were a little short on time because the amount of shooters they were having going through. So the instruction was basically kept to a minimum. I know Stacy would have liked to give more, but it wasn't just possible for that event. It's a wake up moment for me, definitely.
Oh, just think of it as a teaser.
Yeah, I'm not a guy that seeks out challenges that much, but this has my fire going. I want to do better.
Well, it's a self challenge. That's the thing I like about it, because you, when you shoot your first score, it's got the your ranking on the bottom. So, you know, even if you don't get a rifleman's patch, you still get like a sharpshooter or different levels, and you can watch your levels progress. And then finally you hit that rifleman's patch. So it's self-competition. I think that's why I enjoyed it so much.
All right. How about, what were the standings for the MQT?
The MQT was first place. Let me get it here. First place was Patrick Mercer with 251.
Excellent.
Stacy Petlin for 217.
Oh, he smoked her.
And then we had a tie for third between Mr. Matthew McClatchy and Tyler Gerard.
Awesome.
And they each got 197.
Tyler shot very well for the whole thing.
Yeah, he did great.
He was the overall general winner, was he not?
Yep.
Yep.
So that's so those are the winners of stage two.
All right, E.T., so you want to tell us about the stage three, the hostage challenge?
Well, that one went quite a bit better for me. I think it's probably the one that went as expected. I was surprised for the pistol and a little sad for the MQT, but this one, I had my Stevens 200 and 223 Remington. And, yeah, basically performed pretty well for the hostage shooting. You had to put 10 on the hostage taker, and I got basically 9.5 in the hostage taker, and I trimmed the ear off of the hostage. And then you had the snapshots, and there were 4 numbers in different colored forms. You were square, triangle, circle, etc. And I had to ask which color was which, because I'm colorblind. So I didn't want to get surprised when he called out green and I couldn't find it, you know. But on the snapshots there, I didn't perform as well as I could have. I think I rushed a few shots, and I don't know if it hurt me or not. I was running a Bushnell Trophy 5x15 scope, and I was at full magnification. So between, since I was running a blind magazine, I had to put single loaded between each round. And I had a hard time just finding my target at 15x. So that slowed me, and I had to rush a few shots because there were like 5 seconds or so. So that hurt me a bit. But besides that, I was pretty much satisfied. Yep.
Yeah, that's a problem with the high magnification. It really cuts down your field of view.
There was one competitor when we scored the targets. I think just about every single round went into the hostage. And I was like, what the heck was this guy doing? Well, during the fun shoot, I got to shoot his rifle. And they were very small iron sights that he was trying to shoot out to 100 yards with. So he was like, yeah, it wasn't going to happen. He goes, so I just dumped him down range. I'm like, and the hostage shows that. But yeah, when I saw his target, and then we were talking after the fun shoot, during the fun shoot, he had mentioned, he goes, there's no way I was going to be able to see the target properly to shoot. He goes, I'm like, oh, now I get it. So he just kind of chuckled. He had fun with it. So that's the important thing. So do you want how about we do the who came in for second and third next?
Sure.
So for stage 3, the hostage, we had another tie, this time for first place, and it was Wesley Stevens, I think. Let me look at my notes. I believe he came in third for the zombie shoot. So his name showed up a second time, so quite distinguished shooter. And Tyler Gerard, they both scored 75. And again, Tyler had won in, I believe it was stage 2, him in third in stage 2. So he's got the skills clearly as well. Second place for stage 3 was Nathan with 67. And Mario, our friend of the show, Mario, he came in third with 65. So that's the 3 stages. Now, we also had an airsoft section. Mike, do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, it was just a little 3-gun airsoft course that Kevin had set up mostly. And it was just a pistol, rifle, shotgun. Didn't get as much foot traffic, I think, as we'd liked. But unfortunately, I don't know who came second and third, but I do know that Mr. Bolivar came first.
I did it. It was a really fun experience for me. I've never had shot airsoft before, so I didn't know quite what to expect. But it was really, really, really fun. It reminded me of clay shooting when you do the, I forget the term there. Anyway, there's some type of clay shooting competition that you do like a course down in the forest, and you have different obstacles. Goes like that. It was really, really fun. I was surprised at the accuracy of the pistol, the rifle, and the shotgun. It was a real joy. As soon as I figured out that there was actually a rear sight on it and I was hitting low, actually, I think Mike helped me out on that. And I got all of my 10 clays broken with it. It was really, really nice and fun.
Now, didn't Kevin donate that shotgun as the prize to the winner?
Yes, he did.
Okay.
And the M&P actually fit into my I've got the range kit for the M&P, and it fit just perfectly onto the late deck holster that came with it.
Oh, excellent.
So once all the shooting was done, we Chris Anderson had donated some awards, as he has done in the past, and so those got handed out. Matt's Choice Award went to RJ Woods. He put on the fast course on Friday, and is quite active in the podcast community. He's taken a bunch of courses that Slamfire's hosted and such, and now he's entering the realm of training himself. So Matt decided that he was, and rightfully so, deserving of some recognition.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it was a good choice. Yeah,
sure.
Yep. Next was Trevor's Choice Award, and that went to Kevin, and really how, like, that's almost a no-brainer. Kevin, both Kevin and Kelly were just absolute rock stars. They have put so much time and effort into this charity shoot. I think Trevor made a really good choice on that one.
Oh yeah, they worked their butts off. They did it because they're closest to the range. They were the ones that got stuck doing all the building, all the target backers, and picking up a lot of the stuff out there. And then Kevin is efficient. He did everything from the badges to the squattings, and they both worked endlessly on it. So
a big I was shout surprised. Out. Yeah, I was surprised he was still standing by the end of the fun shoot there. I couldn't believe that guy. He'd never stopped a second. I mean, it was awesome.
Yeah. Next was Adriel's Choice Award, which went to Filthy and Memories Escaping Me.
Well, Foster did make the charity shoot, too.
Yeah. He made the charity shoot in the same way that I made it last year. So a memory escapes me the reasoning behind Filthy getting Adriel's Choice. Do you guys recall?
No.
Yeah, Thomas picked it. Okay. Wow, okay. So
moving on.
Thomas picked Filthy because Filthy is the one who has been donating the cutouts of people for the last few years.
He gives me he asked for suggestions, and then he makes them for me. So he asked for a picture of Frosty. And the first one I found was on his webpage, and it's him holding a white AR, like a Stormtrooper AR. And Filthy loved it, so he grabbed it right away and did it. Excellent. But of course, we didn't get to Tannerite him or shoot him this year. Who got him? Did Trevor take Filthy home? Or Adriel home?
I have no idea.
Usually, Trevor keeps him for the man cave. Maybe Adriel will get a send-off at a later time.
Maybe. So next trophy was Best American Podcaster Award, and that went to Stacy for the work she does on the Armed Squirrels. And Matthew from the Liberty or Death podcast won Best International Podcaster Award. He's the second half of the Liberty or Death and from Texas. Next was Trevor from Slamfire Radio. He won Best Canadian Podcaster Award. And then Matthew from the Liberty, Matthew again from Liberty or Death, he won the longest distance traveled. He came all the way up from Texas. And sorry, Corinne, but we do have to do this one. Corinne won the Warning Shot Award. And the premise behind the Warning Shot Award is the bottom three overall point getters of the day have to play paper, rock, scissors. And whoever wins the round of paper, rock, scissors gets to leave. The loser has to stay until there's one loser, and the overall loser gets the McClatchy Award, the Warning Shot Award. So this year it was Corinne. Last year it was Tracy. This year it was Corinne. Sorry.
And Corinne. It's a big 3-foot trophy at least. It's huge. She showed a picture on Facebook and she's got it seatbelted in the back seat on the drive home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, it's nice they drove all the way out from Ontario to the charity shoot.
Let's announce how much money was raised this year. And then we can get on to the fun shoot part of it. So this year, the amount raised was $5,500. And it was raised for Soldier On.
Nice.
That's great.
Awesome. Best charity shoot yet.
Yep. So it's a lot of hard work had gone into this. I think one of the kind of the unsung heroes of the charity shoot, you know, Kelly and Tom or Kelly and Kevin get a ton of recognition, rightfully so. But our prize table was overflowing this year, and a huge thanks has got to go out to Thomas. Oh, he did yeoman's work, getting reaching out to people several times, getting all sorts of sponsors on board, and a shout out to Brian as well. He had a couple connections that also got us some prizes as well. But really, the end of the day, Thomas, like, man, you are the man. You got sponsors, and you got, like you said, like we've said, we had with three long guns, and the CFI came on board with a pistol to raffle off, and you know, it was just amazing the amount of prizes we had to give.
It was excellent. We raised a boatload of money this year. Like, we're more than double of last year's contribution, and that was a 2-year total.
Yeah.
And it just is amazing how people step forward and wanted to get involved and wanted to help, especially people like Brian and Piper. It was great to see. And it was a lot of fun. Like, it was so nice seeing all the guys from Slamfire again, and Filthy and Fred. And I was very happy with the way it turned out. Like, just seeing the expression on the prize winners, because we did raise money, but we gave away guns too. Like, you know, we wanted to give some back stuff to the community. So we had a lot of nice prizes for people. So even if you didn't win something skill-based, you could still win something on the draws, or you could win from the door prize. And we had a lot of excited people. It was great.
I got a deck of cards.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well,
I think I'm the only one. Yeah, you had to get all the signatures from the different podcasters. And a few of them were hiding in the bush there. But I found them all.
I know. I went up just for a break because I was in the shoot house all day and I was hot. And I just wanted to have like a 10-minute break. And as soon as I get in, I have all these people handing me these things to sign. And I didn't realize Kelly was doing it.
No.
So this brings us to the fun shoot. Okay, guys. So once all the prizes were doled out and everyone was happy, and it was fun time. It was time to get everybody's toys out. And there's been one voice that has been quiet this whole time, so I want to start with her. And sweet little Wanda, what did you do for the fun shoot?
I shot my new gun.
You got a new gun.
What'd you get?
I got an Uzi 146.
And it sounds a lot like this.
I recognize that sound.
And yeah. Is this a 5-pound trigger pull or a 6-pound? I'm not sure. You guys tell me.
I was surprised how light it is. It's a lot lighter than my 41. I say maybe a 7.
So now, since Wanda doesn't have her pal, she couldn't take possession of it. So I took possession of it on her behalf. But it's lit a fire under her to get her license.
But so she looked up courses on the way home.
Oh, excellent!
She looked up courses on the way home.
Yes, and she also got a girlfriend to agree to take the course with her. So we'll have two new licensees, hopefully by the fall.
Oh, that's excellent.
Awesome.
And now tell us, your brand new, beautifully black shotgun, it came with a Cerakote, an offer to Cerakote it.
Yes.
What have you decided to Cerakote it?
It's going pink.
Of course it is.
They were so excited about it. The Gunworks and the H&R Hardware people have S&J. Said that they S&J, yes, thank you. They have never done a pink one yet, so they're all excited about doing a pink one for me.
Oh, why not?
So that is awesome. And so until she gets her license, it will. It will have to reside with my collection until then. But
we'll make sure you take her out to shoot it.
Oh yes, Yes, there'll be. She wants to go out and shoot trap with it. And I was like, oh, yeah, that is going to rock so hard. You're going to have these guys with like $3,000, $4,000 over-unders and, you know, acting all, you know, all trappy, fuddy-like. And she's going to walk up with her Uzcon 46 with its 10-round banana magazine. And it's just going to be so awesome. I can't wait.
I can't wait either.
So, what did you think of it when you got to shoot it?
It was great. I mean, it has a big bang. And the only thing is, though, I'm not strong enough to rack it myself. So I have to like build up some muscle.
You'll have to get stronger.
Can I make a suggestion?
I'll have to get stronger. Yeah.
When you send that shotgun to S&J, ask them to take that. Ask them if they can take that spring out.
Because what's the point? Yeah, forward assist. What's the point of the forward assist?
It's supposed to mean like a faster cycling. But the problem is that you're actually moving your point of impact because you're moving your point of impact every time you do it, and it's a lot more energy to cycle it than a normal pump. So you're really lifting the muzzle up between shots. I've got the same thing down the basement, a TriStar Cobra, and it's spring loaded like that. Just see if it'll function without the spring, so it's just a regular pump-action shotgun.
Right.
It'd be a lot easier for her.
It'll move easier?
Yeah, it's just a spring in the magazine, too.
It's just because of it's the left arm, right? Because I shoot with the butt on my right shoulder, so I'm using my left arm to pull back the
And it takes it takes a lot of it. It takes at least 15 pounds of pressure to pull that side black.
Yeah.
It helps you a little bit. It does come back a little bit when you fire it, but not very much. And you've got to get used to the rhythm of how it cycles.
Right. Yeah.
And when you die four times, sometimes, you know, something's got to give somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Well, and this is what I was kind of going with it. Like, the left side is where they put the deep fib and pacemaker and stuff, right? So it's just not strong enough yet.
Now, is he doing anything else to the gun? Is he doing the trigger group or the rails, or is he just Cerakoting the receiver?
No, there's a titanium something with the bolt, I think.
Okay, good. Yeah, that's what I thought, too. So that's going to be the same as my grandpa. You're going to have a gold bolt.
Yes. Yeah, they showed us an AR that they had done, and it had the gold bolt and then had the Cerakote finish on it. Because neither one of us knew what Cerakote was. Like, I was like, I have no idea what it is.
Oh, Andrew had some nice-looking guns when I was up at his place.
Mm-hmm. So, and then we saw them at breakfast this morning at the hotel, and so we were telling them about Wanda's plans to take it out trap shooting, and they were just smiling ear to ear. So,
he didn't finish the tin coating on my barrel, but he brought the barrel with him in case I wanted to shoot the gun, and I did bring the gun. I just never had a chance to shoot it, so I should be getting the barrel back next week. So we'll see how. My grandpa looks all pretty and gold.
I'm very excited to take it out to the range and actually shoot some targets with it and see. Because we were just shooting it into the burn and getting used to it. Like, so it'd be nice to do it on some.
Yeah, take it out and pattern it and play with the different chokes and see what kind of choke spread you get. That's another thing about those Uzcon gun is that they're threaded with three tubes. So.
Yep. Yeah, so I'll probably take her out this weekend, and we'll get it patterned in. And I noticed the rear sight, it's got the carry handle on it. So the one sight was all the way over to the right, so I kind of moved it back to the center. So we'll have to get it sighted in and patterned and whatnot. And I want to run some slugs through it, but I kind of looked at the... there's a pamphlet for the choke tubes, and I gotta figure out which one's which, and cause there's two of them that you can't run slugs through. The modified and something else. And, so I gotta make sure that I figure that out, and then I wanna run some slugs through it. So, not that I have too many plans for Wanda's gun. And you know what I'd love to do? I gotta get my hunting license renewed. I would love to take this thing out hunting.
Really?
Absolutely.
Have you asked the owner yet?
Well, she doesn't know it yet, but
That would make a great turkey gun.
It's got a rail on the bottom and the top. So I also wanted to get a bayonet lug for it and get a bayonet for it. Right, dear?
We
want a bayonet lug for your shotgun for.
Yeah, why do we want that? I don't think we want that.
No, you don't want that.
Yeah, we do. Trust me, we do.
No, I don't think we do. I'm with Thomas.
I think it's a Winchester choke in those guns, too.
Is it?
Yeah.
So does that mean we can't do it, Thomas?
Well, you can get any choke tube you want.
Yeah, if it's a Winchester, it should be compatible with the Mossberg ones also.
Yeah. And if you want to run slugs, you can actually get a rifled choke tube.
Can I?
Yeah. They're about $50, though. Maybe more. It's been a while.
I just got scolded for playing with it, so I gotta stop playing with it. So, yep. So
you're
that's what
with the gun, right?
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
Oh my.
So what else did you do for the fun shoot, Wanda?
That was it.
That was it.
I had fun. I've been home planning my
Hold on. Say that again. You kind of broke up.
I said I had fun driving home, planning the rest of my prizes.
What else did you win?
I won a $100 gift card for Bullseye.
Okay. What do you?
You're cutting out.
He's
going to
kick $100 in. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Say that again.
Is that better?
Yeah,
that's better.
Okay. Okay. Good. So I have a $100 card for, and then Jordan.
Okay, you're still.
I'm going to go get my towel and everything. That he's going to kick in $100.
You're still cutting out. Let me.
Okay, you tell the story.
Let me tell the story because you're cutting out pretty bad.
Sorry.
She got she won the Bullseye gift certificate, which is $100 gift certificate. And so what I said to her the whole drive back from Brockville, she's on her phone. Looking up Ruger 10/22s because there's one she had looked up a long time ago that she really liked, and it was Muddy Girl Camo, and she's all excited. And I said, listen, because you got to spend like in the 280 range to get your two licenses, I'll kick in another $100 on top of the Bullseye gift certificate to go towards your Ruger 10/22. So, of course, then she got even more excited. So...
Nice.
So she's one of us already. She's looking at and buying guns. I like it.
Yep. So, go ahead, babe.
So I can do maple.
I think what she's trying to say is she can do maple seed.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what I said.
Okay. We're barely getting. We're getting like every third word. So she's excited. So next time we go to an apple seed or a maple seed, she'll potentially be able to participate. So
excellent, excellent. That's good to hear.
So, yeah, and then she also got the Highlander $80 gift certificate too, Highlander Tactical. So I got to say, Ryan was a huge class act. As well as the Gunworks guys and the SNJ guys. Once the prizes were kind of, all the draws were done, Ryan was right up to her and congratulated her. And, you know, he's like, you let me know, you email me, let's get together. We'll get something picked out. And then, we were talking about the OozeCon. He's like, oh, we can do, mag carriers for that. And, you know, and then after he was packed up and he was leaving, we were walking by, and again, he put his window down and was chatting with Wanda again, and very excited, very, very class act. Great guy. So I'm looking forward to doing some business with him as well. So, yeah. That was what Wanda did. If her connection was a little bit better, she could have said...
Oh, I feel bad. You're welcome.
You're welcome, babe. Thomas, what did you do for the fun shoot? What kind of did you get shoot anything?
No, Kelly put me to work.
Oh, did she?
I was at the top, bottom all night, and I went up for break. She put me to work. She had me doing stuff. And I got down at the very, very last maybe 15 minutes before everybody was shutting down. And I did try Fred's ICCS Mark 22 that Fred has. Mounted yes. a video, and I put a mag through that, and it was pretty nice.
Yeah, I got to shoot that as well. That was fun. What about you, E.T.? What did you do? Did you? Well, I know you shot one gun for sure during the fun shoot.
Yeah, I did get to try Wanda's beautiful shotgun that she won as a prize. You were kind enough to hand me a couple of bullets there to give it a go. I think I might have been the last one to get in there. That was a joy. I never thought I'd get to handle one of these. Like somebody mentioned earlier, the return assist spring on it kind of caught me by the surprise. But once you know that it's there, you can work with it. You get used to it, you know?
Yeah, you have to work.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I really liked the magazine on it and the mag release, which was pretty similar to the AR platform. So yep. that was a big plus. I didn't even know it was removable chokes on it. So that's even better. Like I was saying earlier, that would probably make a great turkey gun with the adjustable stock and everything.
Well, I bet
That'd
it
be
would.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yep. And just prior to the fun shoot, actually, I think we forgot to mention, I got to fire the Browning 1919 machine gun that was, well, semi-auto belt-fed machine gun that was graciously there from SFRC. Mm-hmm. It's originally 30-06. That one was converted to 308. And I forget the gentleman's name who was running it, but he was a real class act. He gave us a background story on that rifle. And yeah, it was a great experience to get my hands on it. The trigger is a little off. The trigger had to be pulled upwards, so that took some getting used to. And after that, I went to the pistol house, and I traded guns with Thomas Schitka, and he got to shoot my M&T9, my SD9VE, and he let me try his SR9 and his cowboy gun, the Uberti in 357. So that was really fun. Oh, and Rick let me use his Springfield. No, actually, it's a Winchester. M1 Grand that he had there. So I got to handle that as well. And Quirrell had a semi-auto 22 that looked like a space gun there. I forget specifically what it was, but I got to shoot that too. It was a real joy.
Nice.
It wasn't mine.
I think it's a FN Scar look-alike 22.
Oh, yeah, that's one that I shot, the ISCC Mark 22. That was a fun little gun.
Yeah, I think Matt has a video review on that. Well, a different one, but that same model.
All right. Well, I guess that's just about going to do it. Again, like to thank all our sponsors. They were absolutely generous beyond belief. And just like to thank everyone involved, again, Thomas for reaching out to the sponsors, and to, Kelly, and, to Kevin for all the work that they did. Thomas, shout outs.
Well, of course, Kevin and Kelly, you know, they did so much. And my friend Peter came all the way from Ajax, and I think he was in the running for the worst three shots. I think he got beat out as the ultimate loser, but he had a great time. I don't think he won anything. And Benny, Sharp 97, thank you, sir. And a big shout out and a hug to Piper. She was awesome.
Yes. Piper, you rock. Mike, any shout outs?
Tons. I wanted to thank all the sponsors that donated to the event. It really would not have been what it was without them. Giving us time, money, prizes, all that great stuff that really made it what it was. I also want to thank all the volunteers. I mean, they did all the work for nothing, right?
Well, yeah, I should thank Jean-Paul. He ran the line with me, too. I'm sorry. I should thank him.
And, and a super big shout-out to Kelly and Kevin for organizing the whole event. They did a fantastic job.
All right. Excellent. So that's going to wrap up the 6th annual Podcasters Charity Shoot. So if any of you podcasters out there are interested in hosting the 7th, step up. I may or may not have a group that's willing to do it. I don't know. Nobody's. I don't want
to. The problem is we have set the bar so high now. If you decide to take it, you're going to have a lot of work cut out for you because this was so organized. It took so much work by so many people.
I've had a couple people approach me, but I don't want to voluntold anybody, so I don't want to mention anything. But the 7th annual is up for grabs, so if one of the other shows is interested, contact us and or announce it on your show. And I guess that's going to conclude episode 92. Oops.
E.T., did you have any shout-outs?
Thank you, Mike. Sorry.
You know, the other two people on the show, they might have
shout-outs. Yeah, you know, I'm rusty. It's been a while. Yeah. But,
actually, I'll try to make it quick because I'd like to mention everybody that I met over there. I was overwhelmed with all the nice folks that I've met. Particular mention to 10X and 9X. It was a real joy for me to meet him in person. And basically to you guys, your whole crew, I cannot put into words how much of a bunch of nice guys you were. I came down there by myself and I didn't feel alone at all. Everybody was arms wide open. And it made me really feel at home. So I want to thank you guys for making this probably one of my most memorable events in quite a while. So thank you very much, guys and ladies.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for the very kind words. All right, my love. How about you? Do you have any shout outs?
So a big shout out to Kevin and Kelly. They did an amazing job organizing, even just delegating to volunteers and stuff. I had a great, great time being in registration and getting a chance to meeting every single person that went through. There was lots of new people that I met, and I added, I don't know, about a dozen names to my Facebook today of new friends, and I was very excited to be there and thought it ran really smoothly. I was very impressed with the generosity from the sponsors, and it went very well. And, of course, thanks to my baby for the invitation.
No problem, sweetheart. All right. Anything else?
The one thing I would like to add is the guy that won the door prize, the 41.
Oh, yeah.
Really nice guy, but man, did he get excited. It was, he couldn't believe that he won. He was just like a little kid at Christmas. It was just hilarious watching him.
Oh, yeah. So, he was awesome.
So thank you for coming. We appreciate you coming. I'm glad you won the shotgun.
Yeah. All right. So I will bring episode 92 to a close. So until next time, guys and gals and small children, keep your barrels pointed downrange and smoke it.
We promise Kelly will be back next week to make him to draw.
Is that really going to be your sign out?
That's my sign out.
Okay. Michael?
Time spent at the range is time spent with family.
Till next week, guys. Have a great day.
Good night.
Thanks for having me.
I really like 22 Mag.
Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you with any questions or feedback you may have, or if you just want to call shenanigans. You can contact us at host@newshootercanada.ca or through our Facebook page.
The way they look, I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small. They're for sale until I want them all. I like guns. I like guns. I like guns.